Be bold. Take risks. Lead by example. Believe in your power. Say what you feel, mean what you say. Hi, I'm Leslie Ann Sion, host of the new podcast series, Sion 180. I came across these powerful expressions in an Instagram moment while prepping for Sion 180. They really resonated with me as the justification for embarking on this exciting new venture, Sion 180. Sion 180 is a platform for frank, fearless, and fun discussions that move you beyond neutral to help refuel your drive at your pace, no matter the age or gender. Get ready to go the distance and make changes that are necessary to be your best self. Join me at Sion 180 on this journey of discovery and advancement. Welcome to the Sion 180 podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Ann Sion. Today's episode, Women's Health, Unlocking the Taboos. In our last episode, I chatted with Shari Warner, a Jamaican colleague, an attorney turned licensed therapist, who shared with us her journey of career transition, how we can go into drive and push beyond our fears and our comfort zone, and how to spot the signs when a friend or family member needs mental health intervention. This podcast is a Caribbean platform where guests and I have frank, fearless, and fun discussions about personal and professional issues that matter to us to help us move beyond neutral. Today, on this episode, I am delighted to introduce the medically accomplished Brooklyn-born girl from Karakou parentage, Dr. Carol McIntosh, a board-certified medical doctor in obstetrics and gynecology, a fellow of the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. She came to Grenada after spending most of her early career working in the United States and Karakou, traveling on many mission trips to as far away as Sierra Leone. And she accepted with us the position as Director of Hospital Services with our Ministry of Health and Security here in Grenada, where she currently serves as the director for 4 hospitals and a nursing home. Dr. McIntosh is known for pushing the boundaries in getting women to move beyond the taboos of their bodies and owning their health. I'm very excited to hear what she has to share with us today, and I know you will enjoy listening to her. But more than that, you will come away feeling empowered. And by the way, this is not only for the ladies, but also for the men who cherish their women. Fasten your seatbelt because we're about to take off. Welcome, Dr. McIntosh.
Oh, good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure. And just listening to you and hearing how this, what you do, is something that says a lot for you. And it says a lot for us to be empowered. And I'm so glad when you talk about our self-empowerment to make us feel good about ourselves. Excellent.
Thank you so much.
And I'm glad to be a part.
Thank you so much for the encouragement. Thank you for participating on this podcast. I'm thrilled to have you here, as I know audience will, after they've heard our conversation. I want to get straight into the heart of the matter. We are going to be discussing the female anatomy, and there are lots of taboos surrounding women's health. And the first taboo I want to break is the hesitancy and the sensitivity about using that V word, the vagina. Why is that?
Well, you know, again, and I'm glad you bring it up, because we never, as women, are taught to talk about down there. It is, no, don't say anything. Don't say vagina. Don't talk about what's going on there. If you do, then why are you doing that? Why are you bringing attention to yourself? That is one. So when people talk about down there, they say vagina, and vagina has so many words. other names for it. And it's the box, the Kimmy Kimmy, the the candy, the saltfish, all of this. So that for me, when we're starting as a gynecologist and a person's coming in to talk with me, you know, you got to know the words, because they're not going to say, well, my vagina, they're going to say my VJ or my VJJ. And so we want people to start to understand, first, you are wonderfully and fearfully made. That's in the Bible. And I have no problem to talk about my faith here. That is saying that you are wonderfully and fearfully made. So if we are so wonderfully made, if we are made by the same person that made God, then our whole body is a temple. Our whole body should be something that we should want to look at and know inside out. And especially women, because we are the givers of life. We are the ones that bring them in.
Yes.
Everybody comes through the vagina.
That's so true. But yet it's difficult to get us to use that word in the Caribbean. And I'll tell you a story. I am a past student of St. Joseph's Convent, St. George's. We were taught religions. And you didn't have sex education as a course.
Yes.
That was not on. And so you did not talk about sexual health or anything remotely close to that. You were told you had to grow up as an alabaster jar, darling, and just burst open. You couldn't use those keywords at all. The nuns would have a fit. I think my former principal, Sister Philomena Fletcher, would be spinning in her grave now that I'm having this open dialogue. But it's about time that we empower our women folk in the Caribbean to embrace this topic and to speak about it with strength and confidence and not shy away from it.
So one of the things that I would take note as we talk about that, and especially going to Catholic school, you're not supposed to say, remember that we're supposed to wear the long skirts. You're not even supposed to see your knees, let alone talk about down there. And it's something that when you talk about down there, we know ourselves. We as women know ourselves. We know when we're going to get our period. Some of us know when we think that we know when we ovulate. So if you know that, that's going to help you in your health. Because once you know your body, then you'll be able to know when something goes wrong. And if we don't talk about that and we hide it and are ashamed and to not talking about our period. So when we have abnormal bleeding, we're saying, well, if I can't talk about my period, I can't talk about this abnormal bleeding, which may be a sign of some abnormality that can be treated easily. Then we're not going to say it and we can get sicker. So all of this is surrounding not only ownership of our body, but also being able to say to take care, take charge of our health. So it's extremely important. And knowing the words to use, because you have to communicate it. I'm one, yes, you can call it the box. You can call it the Kimmy Kimmy. You can say, and that's Oprah's words. Yes. You can say all of that. And I will know what you're talking about. But some doctors, if you go into the doctor, and you don't say the correct word, they won't have an idea of what you're talking about. So therefore, they can't help you. So it is something that we have to balance what we do, that we know and comfortable with it, but understand, why do we become comfortable with it? Why do we need to talk about this? It's because that's how we're able to communicate, to be able to say, I need help because this is going on. And being able to communicate it in a way to the person who's sitting opposite me, who may not be of the same background, may not be of the same hue, may not be of the same sex. How do I communicate what's going on with me to the person who has to take care of me?
Yes, that is so important, because I know that you are a prolific speaker on women's health issues, and you've lectured a lot and given very important lessons for women. And we're talking, I know I might have started off with the humorous side of, you know, wanting to be fluid with the word vagina. But generally speaking, we are going to discuss, you know, the female anatomy and the typical issues that plague us. And as you mentioned bleeding, I think a lot about young folks that I've interacted with, of who said to me, you know, they've had abnormal bleeding for a while, they ignored it. A lot of them suffer with fibroids. Some have to go into surgery. For the young women out there, at what point should they be concerned? What should they be looking for, and how is it addressed early?
So they should start early. I'm going to tell just a little story of my first period. Okay. I'm in Brooklyn, Saturday morning. Every Saturday morning, my mother goes to fill groceries and my father sits in the house and I'm there. So I'm 10 years old. I wake up. I see all this blood. I come out to my father. I said, I'm bleeding to death. Something's wrong. He looks up and he says, go back to bed and wait for your mother. Now I'm like, oh gosh, I'm gonna die. I'm just gonna go back in the bed and I'm gonna die. I don't know what's going on. My mother comes home. She comes in with a stack of books. And she said, oh, I didn't expect it this early, but let's have the talk. She talked and talked about all kinds of stuff. The only thing I remembered, my brothers don't get this. And that was very upsetting. I was like, this is gonna happen to me every month? Why? And, you know, so when do we start talking about this? Soon. Yes. Immediately. Because young women, young girls, it's going to happen. And you don't know when you're going to get your period. It might be at school. While you're sitting there, something happens. Oh, my gosh. Or walking to school. Or waking up into it. So if just prepare your young girls. That's where you start. And it don't have to be. We're not talking about sex. We're not talking about just simply... This is what we're going to talk about because this may start. So it's not, so you start with normality. You don't want to start with this is abnormal. This is normal. This is a normal part. This is the next stage. Like we did, and I know all of us did, and I'm blunt. I know all of us did when we were sitting around because we would have to all bathe together because you know, our parents are like, no, two or three baths. All y'all get in the bathtub. So we're looking at each other. I'm like, boy, you got hair there. What the heck? What is that? So you start to understand. And you know, my breasts are the same size they were when I was 12. I thought it was like hot. But now I'm like, okay, I'm really flat chested. But you know, you start to think about that and you're talking to each other. Yeah. So you want to get into that conversation of that's normal. Go ahead. What is your anatomy? So you're not surprised. Right. And you understand that. So that when abnormal comes, it's okay to talk about. But first you want to talk about, this is normal. Bleeding each month is normal. Why? Because that's a sign that yes, you're having regular cycles, that your hormones are in place, that when you're ready to consider pregnancy, the uterus is in place and ready to handle pregnancy.
Right.
And that this is something that gives you estrogen. And then when it stops, that means you're in the next stage of normal life, yes. Menopause, yes. And that stops. And your ovaries say, we're done.
Yes.
I've finished. I'm ready to relax. Yes. And that's a good stage because now you don't have to worry about the tampons, the sanitary napkins, all that monthly. And now for women, well, some women in some of the African villages, that's when they become the matriarch because now they're experienced. The person that's gone through menopause is like, wow, you now know something. You are in charge.
Right.
Very positive. Why? Because we hear menopause and people think, oh, you know, she's crazy. She's having wet, hot sweats. I call that my personal summers. You know, all of that different thing. But you see how it now turns around to, well, I'm looking forward to menopause because that's when I'm going to be in charge.
It's a cycle, but I think it starts with exactly what you began with, having the conversation with the girls and letting them know what is to come. My mother didn't approach it with me at all. I found it out. I knew about it through my friends. I was scared to death to tell my mom. And eventually when I told her, I think I just got like a little answer and maybe reference to a couple of things, but it was no detailed discussion at all. Because by nature, she was so conservative in discussing that topic. I tried to do a little better. I'm not sure if I was that successful because I gave books. I gave books and I said, if you have questions, you can ask. So I think, you know, really and truly, it's great for us to give these personal examples that we're not just here preaching. We've actually been through this journey. And so we know why it's important to impart the message. But I want to take us back a little bit to the fibroids and for you to just tell me as a medical specialist, is it possible that this can be detected by a woman at some point? And what point is that?
Okay, so fibroids. So let's start off with the uterus. The uterus is the womb which carries the pregnancy, okay? And the uterus has the upper portion and then the cervix. And that's inside the abdomen, and it has the tubes and ovaries. So a fibroid is an overgrowth of the muscle of the uterus. Like the uterus has a muscle, yes. There's a certain portion, there's a certain layer, and it starts to grow. And it can grow in different areas. 90% of women have fibroids. Now they can be small, they can be extremely large. And an extremely large one can cause a lot of bleeding. But an extremely small one sitting inside the cavity can also cause a lot of bleeding. So size is not determinant. When do we know about it? Usually when it impacts us. So when we go for our regular exam, and we should start our regular exams with our gynecologist at 21 or 3 years after becoming sexually active. Mm-hmm. And when they do the exam, they would note or may note something, because all uterus are the size of a fist. 8 centimeters, all of us. That's the normal size of a fully developed uterus. So when they do the exam and it's larger than that, they will say, that might be related to a fibroid. Did a fibroid cause it to grow? And that may be the first sign. So on your regular annual visit to the gynecologist may be the first sign. Or if you're having, we have regular periods, and your periods have been fine, but then you started noticing after a time, your periods have gotten longer and heavier. That can be a sign of the fibroid. Or when you're pregnant, the uterus is growing, but it's growing faster than the pregnancy itself. And the doctor's noting, uterus is much larger than that. Fibroid, possible. Or you notice that, my stomach can never get flat again. It's just, there's a little pouch there, and I'm not pregnant, nowhere near that. But something is causing my uterus, my abdomen to be larger, and you go in to be evaluated. Again, could be a fibroid.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, and sometimes it ends in surgery, which could be very complicated and dangerous for young women. What do we tell them about addressing the issue once it's diagnosed?
Right. So this is where you want to have that conversation with your physician, because there's different types of surgeries or treatments for fibroids. The surgical treatments can simply be, let us remove the fibroid, let us remove the myoma, which is the medical term, and leave the uterus in place. And that's for people who are considering wanting to have a pregnancy, wanting to be pregnant, wanting to carry a child. Because if you take out the uterus or do a hysterectomy, that's not possible. The other points are, then they may consider taking out the entire uterus, because there's so many fibroids that if you try to remove one, it will cause even more bleeding and become dangerous. Then there's also the point of, do I take out the uterus with the tubes and ovaries, and that can put you into menopause? Then there's also the point, do I take out the uterus with the fibroids, and if the fibroid is in the cervix? And so some people talk about taking out just the uterus and leaving the cervix, because that's the G-spot and would not cause change in sexual activity. So that's another portion. So depending on where it sits will determine how we start to look at it. Depending on where it sits and how old you are and what your plans are for future will determine if it's removal of the fibroid alone or hysterectomy. And then the next one is the way that you go about doing this. You may decide to do it by going through the vagina and taking out through the vagina so there's no scar. Or there's what we call band-aid surgery, which is where you put a scope in with a camera and you can look at how you take out the uterus by not opening up the full abdomen. That's laparoscopic surgery.
Right.
Or laparoscopic removal, minimally invasive. And then there's the other one, that's Da Vinci robotics, where the surgeon is sitting in another room, looking at the screen, and it's a robot that's in your abdomen doing the surgery. So they're sitting separately, comfortably watching and doing that. Again, minimally invasive, but a lot more extensive because you have a lot more arms that you're working with. So there's different ways. So there's the technique, there's a different process, and the different eye areas that you look at to be able to take out fibroids. But that's dependent on how it presents and what's going on.
I like the use of the technology in medicine, obviously, because it's heading more and more in that direction. And as you mentioned that to me, it takes me to, again, another very prevalent issue with Caribbean women, and that's cancers. And the importance we hear about colonoscopy. And I lost a friend, very, very close friend, a few years ago from colon cancer. And she died within months of diagnosis. It hit me like a rock. We were gutted by it. I flew to England to tell her goodbye. It was very gut-wrenching. And so when you start to read about this disease, you begin to realize that she had signs and maybe didn't think there was anything about it. She did the right thing. She went to doctors. She utilized the services of NHS. But somehow, it never got to light until it was too late. And I would really like you to tell us, the Caribbean audience, what we need to do about this. How can we make sure that this is diagnosed early? What care we need to take, especially with respect to getting that colonoscopy?
Yes. So you're talking about colonoscopy.
Yes.
That's related to the preventative tests. And that's what we're talking about. You don't go to the doctor because something is wrong. You want to start to go to the doctor for preventative care to do, like we do with our car, a tune-up to check.
Right.
So as you're saying, exactly that. One, then the base thing is, first understanding that our bodies do the same thing every single day. When you see something shift from normal, that's when you should stop and say, well, why is that occurring? And that's the first sign when we go to the doctor. Okay, now let's go back to preventative care. There's some basic things that you should be doing. As I said, starting at 21, you go to the gynecologist. So when you go, you have a regular exam, you have a pap smear to help to rule out for cervical cancer. You have a breast exam to be able to evaluate, and they tell you when you would start for mammography. Okay, that's one. But then as you're getting older, there's different things you want to start with. They had started to say for colonoscopy, which looks at the bowel, which looks for colon cancer, start at the age of 50. They are now shifting that back to 40 years of age because they're realizing more and more young people are getting it and getting it at such an advanced stage that they're worried. Yeah. So you want to say, let me do the colonoscopy or let me be evaluated. Let me look at and. It's like the same thing I always say, like take a mirror and look down there. Look in the toilet. Look at your stool. You know, it's like, okay, it looks the same. Or did it change? Or is there blood? Or is the color change? And that's not something to be like, oh my gosh, am I getting, yes, you're getting into yourself. And to start to look for that, because that may tell you, I need to go back in sooner. So even though they say doing colonoscopy at 40, I'm having bleeding or issues with my stool at 30. I'm coming to the doctor. Yes. So the preventative care is there. Colonoscopy, 40 or 50. Mammography at 40, unless you have a family history of breast cancer. And then if it's your mother or your sister, you start mammography at 10 years before they were diagnosed, their age. Okay. So they were diagnosed at 40. That means I'm starting my mammograms at 30.
Wow.
Then you also have, like I said, the pap smear. Your self breast exam and the doctor doing a breast exam when you go in to see them. Then they also have the general tests that you do. You're looking at your liver function test, you look at your CBC, your blood pressure test. So all of these are preventative, normal things. And when you see an abnormality, how do you change that? One cancer we don't touch on it much is ovarian cancer. Very difficult to know. In fact, when we figure it out, it's usually stage 3 because it doesn't present itself because it's the ovaries. When they start getting the cancer, you don't see signs. So that's a difficult one. So that's why we tell you to go in regularly. And if you notice, you know, my stomach feels a little tight or I can't eat as much, that might be fluid and that might be a sign, but you want to go in regularly. It's because if you see a doctor and he knows or he or she knows the exam is normal, each year it changes, they will may do an ultrasound and may catch it early.
So
is
the HPV vaccine related to the ovarian or the cervical cancer? Which one?
Cervical. That's what's going to go into. Cervical cancer is a cancer we know the cause of. Right. Because 70% of all cervical cancers have HPV virus in it, the human papilloma virus. And the human papilloma virus can cause warts in the hands, all over the body, and it's about 100 different viruses. And so you have all these different types, about 30 of them can cause abnormal changes on the cervix. But that's before cancer. They cause the abnormal changes. If we get in there at that time, we can treat it and stop the road to cancer. That's why if you can get the vaccine, and that means that this HPV cannot act on your cervix, you can actually stop the road, stop the path, stop the issue of cancer. So cervical cancer is one that you actually can say we have a potential cure for it. We have a potential way to treat it before it even gets here.
And at what age should we get that HPV vaccine for our girls?
At 10, 11, 12.
Really?
And it doesn't mean that she's as young as that. And I'm going to say this because people talked about when it first came out, the issue was, it's a sexually transmitted disease, because cervical cancer is, because that's how HPV is transmitted.
Yeah.
Unless it's through birth, through the vaginal vault. And they said, well, if I'm giving my child HPV vaccine, then I'm saying that she's sexually active. I'm not doing that. And that's how it came out. And that's why there was, no, I'm not doing that. Now we said, it's a cervical cancer prevention vaccine.
Right.
So let's start it early. Start it at 10, 11, 12. You got it in place. So whenever, because we are not, no judgment here. Whenever this person, because sometimes it can be rape, can be incest. So we're not talking about sex starting at 12, 13. But if they're exposed, you already have the protection. And the young boys. Because who are they having sex with but the young boys? And they too need the vaccine because they can get penile cancer, anal cancer.
I'm learning something. I didn't know it was recommended for boys as well.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
Yes, because that makes sense. You could be having sex with anyone, but who am I having sex with but the young boy? Yes. And if he gets the vaccine and he has HPV, and HPV is the number one sexually transmitted disease in the world.
I'd like you to repeat that.
85% of all women and men have been exposed to HPV. HPV is the number one sexually transmitted disease in the world. Period, the end.
This has been such a fascinating conversation with Dr. McIntosh that we really cannot end here, even though we are way out of time. Please join us next week for part two of this spirited and robust discussion on women's health, Unlocking the Taboos, with Dr. Carol McIntosh, our Hospital Services Director here in Grenada. Thank you so much for joining us. See you next Sunday, March 20th. Be safe, everybody.